Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So before we leave you this hour, we're going to explore, if not explode or attempt to, the conventional wisdom on life after no debt ceiling. If Congress gets to that point by August 2nd, we're told there will be a U.S. default. That default will have extraordinary implications around the globe, and it appears as though members of Congress are feeling that pressure. But should they? And some members of Congress act like they're feeling no pressure at all. We're joined now by Mark Joffe, who's a consultant in the credit assessment field. He joins us from California. Thanks for waking up early for us, Mark.
Thanks, John.
And Felix Salmon joins us. Is it Salmon or Salmon?
It's Salmon.
Salmon. Felix Salmon is a finance blogger at Reuters. You're a financial reporter at Reuters, basically, right?
Well, I do more, you know, commentating and punditry than reporting. It's much easier.
And Mark, is it the case that you're a senior advisor to something called the Kamakura Corporation and used to be with Moody's Analytics, right?
That's all correct, yes.
And, I mean, you're basically a colleague of good old Mark Zandi, who we hear all the time, who's at Moody's Analytics now, talking about risk and describing bedlam if we default, right?
Yes, I was his colleague at Moody's Analytics. Of course, Moody's Analytics is separate from Moody's Investor Service. So those of us who worked at Moody's Analytics really had nothing to do with the sovereign credit rating.
All right. So both of you essentially are commentators or pundits, to use your word, Felix, on this issue, this gray area of trying to assess risk and the risk of a default or the risk that someone's not going to pay somebody back. And Mark Joffe, how would you assess the risk right now of a U.S. default, something the president says is unprecedented?
Well, John, as you know, in my blog, I recently pointed out three cases where, in fact, the U.S. has defaulted. So, you know, we did survive 235 years with three defaults, so it doesn't seem like it would be necessarily the end of the world.
Remind us when the last default was?
The last significant default occurred in 1933. There was a technical default in 1979. Technical default just means it's some kind of glitch that results in a very slight delay in payment. In 1933, FDR took us off the gold standard and abrogated a clause in Treasury bonds that enabled bondholders to receive their interest and principal payments in the form of gold. And then there was a 40% devaluation of the dollar against gold.
Can I push back on you there on that particular one? Because it helps us to illuminate how this situation is a little bit different. At that time, the U.S. was kind of at the top of the heap in terms of what happened to everybody else in that global recession. Sure, we defaulted, but we defaulted much more tepidly than the rest of the world. In this particular case, we would be sort of standing alone as the defaulters, correct?
That's certainly true in this particular case. You know, my concern, John, is really with the longer term, 10 to 20 years from now, when based on CBO forecasts, our debt ratios are going to be basically off the map. And then we'll actually have a situation where, if nothing is done, we'll have a position where we'll have to decide whether we're going to be paying Social Security and Medicare recipients or whether we're going to be paying bondholders.
So your issue is, don't worry about this short-term default. Worry much more about a huge sort of inability to basically fund our own deficit based on our spending rates over the next 10 years.
Correct.
All right. Felix Salmon, finance blogger at Reuters, your position is a little bit different. You kind of say, why have these stupid credit ratings anyway? AAA, schmipple A.
Well, firstly, from what Mark was saying, we don't need to worry about, like, maybe in 20 years we'll have to choose between making bond payments and making Social Security or Medicare payments. We're worrying about whether we can do that in 4 days. Okay, what we're doing is we're taking a theoretical problem in 20 years' time and we're turning it into a real problem, like, next week. So This is unbelievably stupid. There's absolutely no reason why we can't pay all of our bills right now. We have more than enough money to do that, and we have more than enough borrowing capacity to do that. And this is a crisis brought on entirely of our own making upon ourselves.
All right, but then Felix, let's talk about the credit ratings then. If I was on a plane, all right, Felix, I gather you're on planes a lot, right? And I was told that the pilot of the plane was incredibly stupid. I would want to get off the plane. Wouldn't you rate the pilot of the economy in this particular case as
triple A,
as maybe double B?
So when you're talking about sovereigns, especially there are two different aspects which go into a credit rating. One is what's known as the ability to pay, and that's what Mark was talking about, you know, CBO forecasts and that kind of thing. And the other one is something called willingness to pay. So if you're a tin pot Latin American dictator and you want to make a point about, you know, standing up to foreign bankers, then you just default, not because you have to default, because you are politically stupid. And what we're seeing right now is that second kind of risk, the willingness to pay risk, the political stupidity risk. And absolutely, willingness to pay is a major component of sovereign credit ratings. And anyone who thinks that the U.S. deserves its AAA rating just has to look at Congress last night and say to themselves, why on earth should we have complete and utter faith that these people are going to do the common sense thing?
Right,
they seem to have no ability to do it.
So in this crisis, are the credit ratings meaningful or not?
The credit ratings are not that meaningful, to be honest. People buy treasuries for many reasons, because they're the biggest and most liquid and safest market in the world. And they're going to continue to buy treasuries even if the U.S. loses its AAA credit rating.
All right. Felix Salmon, let's go to Mark Jaffe for a moment. What, and I'll ask you this before we go, what conventional wisdom about this debt ceiling crisis is completely wrong in your view, Mark Jaffe?
The conventional wisdom about this crisis? I would just go back to the earlier point. There really isn't a serious problem right now. I think in the extreme, Obama will invoke the 14th Amendment, and there will not be a default. We really have a problem going 20 years out, and the current scenario is showing Congress's inability, due to the increasing polarization of the two parties, to really meaningfully grapple with our fiscal situation. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be spending cuts. It could be tax increases.
All right.
As well. They're not capable of doing either one.
Mark Jaffe, as a risk consultant in the credit assessment field, he talks to us from California. Felix Salmon, will the U.S. have a AAA rating by Wednesday of next week?
Yes. Yeah, but it won't last much longer than that.
Wow.
Really?
Really. No, the credit rating agencies have basically said that they're going to downgrade the U.S. I mean, even if we pass this debt ceiling bill, we're still going to get a downgrade within the next few months.
All right, we'll talk to you after next Wednesday. Felix Salmon is a finance blogger at Reuters. Mark Jaffe, a consultant in the credit assessment field. The conventional wisdom on the debt ceiling, or life after a debt ceiling no deal. We'll just have to see. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
If you want to follow the political twists and turns, follow Todd Zwillick's Twitter feed, D.C. correspondent Todd_Zwillick. In the meantime, the conversation continues on pathways for Black families to either reach the middle class or stay there. What career tack should they take? Listeners have advice.
This is Troy from Green Bay, Wisconsin. I would just like to add that there's a lot of truck driving jobs that are in need out here. Virtually, your schooling would be paid for by the companies. It's a job that you could jump into making anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 a year if anybody has lost their career and is looking to at least make a middle class income. That is the best route I can think to take.
That's a little pun there from one of our listeners. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE or head over to thetakeaway.org with your advice. I'm Celeste Headlee.
We got jobs. We got all kinds of things. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.